As I said at the beginning, today's gospel reading is chapter 25 of Matthew, the story of the 10 bridesmaids, the five who were wise, the five who were foolish. The next 2 weeks, we are going to be listening to the gospels from chapter 25, and they make up that part of the gospel where Jesus is speaking about the end times. That's not something unique to him. That's very historically Hebrew. If you go back to the very beginnings of the Hebrew scriptures, you find all the way through that there is a strong sense of the end of time. That time on this earth is measured by the things we do, and somehow we are going to be held accountable. And it's that accountability that forms basically a lot of the motivation, certainly of people in religious organizations. I know in my former life, you know, the threat of hell was something that was very, very real and held over your head for every little thing that you did. So being conscious of that, you live your life very, very differently perhaps than you would because you're always thinking of something more. But I'd like to throw a little bit of curveball in there because there's, I think, something more to be considered here and something to better understand scriptures altogether. But this is the gospel reading from chapter 25. And then the kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. Now as the bridegroom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a shout. Look, here is the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. And then all those bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise replied, no, there will not be enough for you and for us. You had better go to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. And while they went to buy it, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went with him into the wedding banquet. And the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he replied, truly, I tell you, I do not know you. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. The Gospel of the Lord. Now, it's obvious from that there is a very strong sense that two things. Somehow we're going to be called upon at any given moment to face our judgment. That's one of them. The other is that somehow we can be distracted by so many things and so many other ways of looking at life that we tend to miss probably the heart and soul of what our faith is all about. And those two things, I think, come through very clearly in this story. However, when we look at the idea that we are going to somehow have individual judgments, and we will see that again when we talk about the lambs and the goats, you know, God stands there and separates one group and sets the sheep over there and the goats over there, and he says to each one, whatever you have done to the least of these, you have done to me, where God identifies with every individual on earth, and we are held accountable to everything we do for one another. That individual judgment is something that I think forces us in some ways to rethink who God is. I give you this example. There was a man that was with us in Madison who struggled for all the time I was there, 15 years, was struggling to find the right way to know how he was supposed to live with God. And he was into the Buddhist, and then he left there and went into Tao. And from there he went into something else, and then he tried Judaism. And he was born a Catholic, brought his children up as Catholic, and I was in his 70s. And he was still hunting and searching. And ultimately, he had an illness of some kind, and he lost a little bit of his faculties. And in the last 3 months or 6 months of his life, he returned to the Catholic Church because that's all he could hold on to. Which tells you that where we come from in terms of that understanding really determines an awful lot of how we not only see our lives, but also perceive our deaths. Do we believe that there's a God who judges? That's a good question. Do we believe in a God who somehow has created a place, especially for those who have done everything correctly? Do we believe that that place is not accessible to those who have not believed certain doctrines, followed certain practices, failed to live up to their Christian understanding as we know it today? Do those who maybe do horrible things that are unforgivable in our world, are they automatically excluded from that place with God? Those are simple things, and they're hard questions, but you know, if you think about those things, if you ask those questions, you are brought to a place of a lot of confusion and an awful lot of mystery, because we don't know, do we? We really don't know. What we take, if we listen to Jesus, is very different from what he grew up with. Now, he was a Jew. Remember, Jesus was a Jew. He wasn't a Christian. He was a Jew, and a good believing Jew, because he knew the law, he knew the temple, he knew it well enough to begin to criticize it when it was wrong. He didn't come out of left field. He was formed in that Judas tradition and came out as one who wanted to reform it, only because he knew what it was all about, what it was supposed to be. Now, because he was Jewish, he had an understanding of God as a Jew, that God is one who judges, that God is one who punishes, that God is one who separates good from evil, that God, there's no place for anything except positive perfection in God. There's no room for anything less than perfection. That's what he grew up with. That's what he taught and thought until he had his moment in the desert where he encountered God in a way that changed his mind. And what he began to reveal was very different. What we have here in this story is very, very Hebraic. We have two classes of people, one being judged against the other. One wise because they thought ahead and they were ready for whenever God was going to show up. And the others were foolish because they didn't plan ahead and were not ready when the time came. And so they deserve punishment, don't they? Think about it this way from Jesus' perspective. What would Jesus do in that? Now, he's saying this parable, right? Now, look at this. First of all, the parable is about a wedding. What's a wedding about? Relationship, right? And who do you invite to a wedding? Who's in the wedding party? Strangers? People come off the street? No, they're people that people know. You invite close friends, your intimates, to be part of your wedding party. So we have relationship being celebrated by people who live already in a relationship. And what happens in that relationship? One part of the relationship turns on the other one and says, no, we are not going to relate to you. We are going to take care of ourselves. And so, in this story, the ones who took care of themselves got blessed, and the ones who didn't take care of themselves were punished. How does that buck up against Jesus saying about the widow who came and gave everything she had, her last penny, and he said, she gave more than everybody else because she gave everything she had? And what about the example he gives us about the Samaritan who comes upon a total stranger who is somebody who is really one of his enemies because they've been enemies for many, many years? And he takes care of this person, not just takes care of him, but provides for his care even after he's gone and says, when I come back, I'll take care of all the rest of it. do what you need to do. And what about the people who were gathered with the disciples who had 5 loaves and 2 fish? Did he tell them to go shopping? His disciples had no idea that 5 loaves and 2 fish, given generously, can really feed an awful lot more than themselves. And ultimately, what did Jesus do with his life? He gave himself totally for what he believed. And as a result of that, we hold him up as the Christ figure, the one of God, who is the doorway into union with God. How do these two things sit together in the same scriptures? Is Jesus fooling us? If we really pay attention to this story from what Jesus said, really the ones who need to be rewarded are the victims. And those are the ones who were foolish, because they didn't have what they needed. But in a community, according to Jesus, you give to the ones who don't have, and that's how you find blessing. And the ones who need to somehow be scorned are the ones who chose not to give. So you see, the parable opens up a lot of things. What's important, most of all, is that we will find again and again in the scriptures that there are two things that are taking place, always two ways to understand, especially when it comes to judgment. There is individual responsibility, and God will check you out. You will have to account for everything you do in your life, and you can have that, keep that. On the other hand, as far as God is concerned, the biggest sins we commit are the ones against each other. Did Jesus not say the greatest commandment of all that fulfills all the laws and all the prophecies is love God and love your neighbor as yourself? That covers everything. That being the case, will we be judged simply on what we are individually, or will we be judged somehow for how we live in a community? Those are things that theologians have argued about for centuries, and they will continue to argue about them forever and ever and ever, because nobody knows the answer. But I will tell you this. We said in the opening call to worship, there was a phrase here that jumped out at me while I was reading it. It says, what pleases God is to have justice pour from our lives and our work like an ever-flowing stream. Ever-flowing stream. It's constant. It's a given. That's just how we live. And the other thing that struck me was when you all sang, be still in silence. Be still. Our pursuit of God, brothers and sisters, needs to go beyond all of this. This is not the answer. This is a guide. Our pursuit of God is going to ask us very simply this. This is the simplest thing in the whole world. And I'll try to give you a picture so you can visualize. God, we say God is bigger than all of this, true. God is bigger than the universe, true. God is everything. How does that practically come out? Well, did you read in the paper this week that they saw a supernova? A supernova is a star that's exploding, that's dying. The supernova has been erupting or exploding for many, 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 many years, and it's trillions and trillions of miles away from us. Trillions and trillions of miles away. And you know, we only see light as it travels. So this thing has been going for a long time. It may have burned out by now, but trillions and trillions of miles in the universe. Can you imagine how vast the universe is? I had an image the other day thinking about this. Consider, you're going to love this, a pea. Okay, you got a pea? Okay. Now plop that pea in the middle of the largest ocean in the world and let it sink down to the bottom. That pea is the earth. And the ocean, the vastness of the ocean, is probably the extent of what we know of the universe. So see how significant the earth really is? See how insignificant our thinking is and our restrictions on things? This is vast. It's huge. And what I would suggest, when the prophet uses the word like a flowing stream, and again in Scripture, the flowing stream over someone's head is baptism with oil, it's the crowning of the king. Flowing waters is life. That God is the flowing stream in which all of the universe, everything that possibly exists, floats. That God is available to everybody on that P 24/7. Not restricted by any of our buildings or any of our theologies, right there, present to every one of us, the God who is a flow stream in which all things exist. The simple thing is knowing how to connect and how you connect, brothers and sisters. In some ways, what we do here, but that's intellectual. There are other ways that are more emotional that connects you emotionally. To experience God as we experience one another requires two things. Silence, quiet, and stillness. If we could practice silence and stillness for 5 minutes a day, one of the things that will begin to happen is that we will understand ourselves from a very different perspective, because that's how we open ourselves to that flowing stream of God. And this all sounds crazy, right? This is the way of the mystics. This is the way of people who were transformers in their lives and transformed the world around them. And they were not necessarily anybody special. They just found themselves able to be still and be silent, to shut it all out for a brief moment, to experience who I really am in that place where nothing is going to define me. And that's where we will meet God. It's a thought for Sunday morning, and I think it's better than worrying about whether I'm going to be judged and condemned because I did something or didn't do something. That to me is like, you know, after a while, who cares? I mean, do you really? Does that really motivate anybody? No, not until we're ready to die, I guess. But it's something to think about, because that's the truth. Amen. Holy One, how we have so diminished the reality of your presence, of your availability to each one of us, of the power within ourselves to be so loving, so filled with justice and honesty, so overwhelmed with care for one another that indeed the world we touch becomes a better place. We have so many different ways of explaining, understanding, and thinking. And certainly with the libraries of books that are being printed every day, there are even more thoughts to consider, but all of them remain somewhere in our heads and never get us to a place where we are open to you. Jesus taught us that the best way to open to you was to be open to each other, because each one of us is a representation of your presence in the world. We are, in fact, your essence walking on this planet. But even that gets shrouded with so many of our judgments, our concerns, our prejudices, those things that we like or dislike, those things that we approve of or disapprove of, those things that somehow color another person so that we never discover who that person really is. And over history, we have become ever more sensitive or insensitive to that reality, because its falseness has become our truth. It is foolish for us to even consider something so way out as you being the person in whom we all do live and have our being. The whole universe is somehow contained by your generosity and your grace. But that thought is so overwhelming that we fear leaving what is secure for ourselves at this point, knowing you as we do, however limited, and being satisfied that way. But today we open ourselves and ask very simply that you would touch us, each one of us, in a place where we live most deeply, in that place where we really know who we are, without any of the definitions and qualifications that we've amassed, without any of the things we have accomplished or achieved, with none of the things that we have somehow become a part of, but simply as we are, as you see us. Touch us in that place and assure us that indeed you are ever present. You are that close. You are that much a part of our very breath. In fact, dare we say that every moment with you is a moment of the now. For you are the now. You are only met in the moment, not in reverie, not in memory, not in intellectual thought, but in the moment. Be with us now. Touch us now. And be forever the moment upon which we live. And hear our voices as we join them together, the voices of the myriads of people around this earth, all who seek to know you, all who desperately cling to some idea about you that makes their lives more manageable and meaningful, all those who believe and all those who do not. And hear us as we call you God, our Father who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, the glory forever. Amen.